The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 22nd, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do. Because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Sonoma County. It's been so nice and warm, and I'm really excited. I had the honor yesterday of a meeting with Carmenia Shorts, who is the California organizer for the National Organization for Women, and that's called NOW. And we're really excited because on August the 10th, we're going to have the NOW conference, California conference, that's going to be happening here in Sonoma County, home of the Women's National Women's History Alliance. Amazing, amazing event. Well, I'm very, very excited about this morning's show. I have a special guest with me this morning. Joining me on the phone will be Starhawk. Starhawk is an author, an activist, a permaculture designer, a teacher, and prominent voice in modern earth-based spirituality and ecofeminism. What a beautiful thought. You know, ecofeminism. I love it. And we're going to have talk about that one. She is an author and co-author of 13 books, including The Spiral Dance, which Ken and I had the honor of doing several times, Rebirth of the Ancient Religion of the Great Goddess, and the novel, The Fifth Sacred Thing, and its sequel, The City of Refuge. Wow, what a busy woman. It's amazing. And I know it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful interview. I've known Starhawk for years. We've done the spiral dance with her, and she really brings a wealth of information. And not only that, she's a very compassionate and earth-based human being, and I'm really proud to be interviewing her this morning. Well, you know, I had some sad, but we went through, Ken and I have been going through a little bit of sadness here. Our dear friend Keith Alden passed away on April 15th. That's last week of tax day. I mean, Keith hated taxes, and it's really funny that it would be on tax day that he passed away. Don't you think so, Ken? I mean, it's just so interesting. And I want to send out condolences to his mother, June Alden, and his sister, Holly, and their family. They live in Wisconsin, and it's a sad day when you lose somebody. But Keith was a very spiritual man, and for my own experience, I mean, we sat with him while he was making his transition for about an hour, and it was such a sacred feeling. And also, as I looked at him as he laid in rest, I said to myself, what a miracle this whole life is. I mean, we come into the life, we have birth, our mothers go through labor, we don't know what happened, and here, all of a sudden, boom, we're here. And then now we're transcending. You know, Keith was a year younger than Ken, and I just know he's on a very, very strong spiritual journey. He was a devotee of Adi Da, and there's a community up in Lakeport. I want to send my condolences to all of them and all of you folks that are listening. And I hope my friend Randy Hurley is listening. Yes?
Lokoma,
I'm sorry. And I hope my friend Randolph Hurley is listening. Randolph, I hope you're feeling better, my friend. You know, he's one of my devoted fans. I mean, I just get excited when I think that he's listening. Well, today is an incredibly special day. You know, Women's Spaces has been really interesting. You know, we've had April Fool's Day on the first Monday of the month. We had my birthday, and now we're having Earth Day. on women's spaces. So I'm really excited. You know, it's an annual event that happens on April 22nd to demonstrate support for environmental protection. It was first held in April 22nd, 1970. It now includes a wide range of events coordinated globally by Earth Day FOG, formerly Earth Day Network, including 1 billion people in more than 193 countries celebrate this day. And the official theme for 2024, and I cannot believe it that we're still talking about it and we're still struggling with it, planet versus plastic. I mean, I remember 20 years ago when we were talking about we got to get rid of all the plastics in the ocean and all that other stuff. And I cannot believe it. This is the 54th anniversary of Earth Day. And what's really exciting about this is that Ken went to San Jose State in 1970, just pre-Earth Day, and he's going to tell his story as soon as I make these few announcements. You know, this has become a tradition. We do this every year, where Ken talks about that they buried a car at San Jose State. And I just feel it was a very exciting moment. And one of the questions I'm going to ask Starhawk is, why is all this taking so long? 54 years and we're still struggling? You know, we had a former president who went and destroyed all the archives with what the environmentalists were doing. So I don't understand why it's been such a struggle. Also, Earth Day also honors Rachel Carson. She's a woman who changed America and influenced the environmental movement with her revolutionary book, Silent Spring. And what's so interesting about Silent Spring, it was written 62 years ago. You know, Silent Spring is an environmental science book by Rachel Carson. The book was published on September 27th, 1962, documenting the diverse environmental effects caused by the indiscriminate use of pesticides. 62 years ago, this book was written. And I remember when I first read it, my daughter was about, let's see, I think she was about maybe 8 years old. We had come up to Sonoma County, and there was a place called Community Market, and there was a bunch of women. They're just wonderful, wonderful lesbian women who were running the market. And I came there with my little girl, and they recommended Silent Spring to me, and I read it, and I go, oh, my God, that's when I first got into organic food, you know. And it was so interesting listening to these women and finding all this out. And here we are, 62 years later, and we're still trying to get what's the name of that stuff, the poison that they put on their weeds, Ken? Roundup. We're still trying to get rid of Roundup. 62 years later, we know it causes cancer. We've had enough studies for the past 62 years, you know, to fill a library, and we're still struggling to get Roundup off the shelf, or at least get it notified, or people are notified in a proper way that this is a cancer-causing ingredient. Well, you know the answer, folks. It seems like money, 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 money. If you can make money out of it, do it. And it doesn't matter if it destroys the environment, it destroys us, if it kills children. I mean, I could go on and on. It's so frustrating sometimes. It really is. You know, when I think of my dear friend Keith Alden, I was looking at him as he slept so peacefully, and Lord only knows where he's going, I just thought to myself, God, he doesn't have to deal with all this stuff anymore. You know, here I am, a great-grandmother now, you know, worrying about my great-grandchildren. What are they breathing in? I mean, they're fortunately in a healthy environment, but what about all the other children? What about the children in cities that are breathing in all the toxins? What about the children in wars? You know, our military advises us that war is the biggest cause of environmental issues. You know, so how come we haven't stopped wars yet? I mean, it seems to me that after all these years of fighting and warring and not paying attention to the environment, it's time to wake up. You know, don't you think so? Well, anyway, that's enough of my rant for today. Well, as a part of, you know, I do the segment, Our History is Our Strength. And as a part of Our History is Our Strength, this morning, because it is Earth Day, like I said, the 54th year that we're celebrating it, it's very interesting that there are stories that happened before Earth Day. And Ken Norton, my engineer, my partner, my co-producer here, was going to San Jose at that time. And I'd like like him to tell his story. So, Ken, let's start with you. Let's start and talk. You know, you went to when you were a student at Sonoma State. What was your major, and what was going on for you? I know the Vietnam War was going on, and lots of protesting, and also the environmental issues.
Well, I went to San Jose State. I entered the school in 1968, and my major was material science and engineering. And I had taken a philosophy class, and from there I heard about this action that was going to take place in 1970 in February, which where he had planned to bury a car. And so a collection was taken up with all the students, and we collected enough, unfortunately, not for the expensive car to put in. We bought a Maverick to stick in there, a brand-new Maverick, and we towed it to the campus and dug the hole and dropped the Maverick into the hole. And it was all part of a, you know, heightened awareness at the time. As Elaine was saying, Rachel Carlson, 8 years before, had come out with her book, Silent Spring. And so we were students at that time. We were already made aware of, yes, you know, we're in danger here. If we can't just drive our cars as usual, we have to think about what the cost is to us environmentally. And so that was the purpose of burying the car.
So you guys, you took up a collection, and why a Maverick? Why a Maverick?
Well, I'm saying because we couldn't afford the more expensive car.
So, you know, there's actually I actually have a picture of Ken. There was an article written, and there's actually a picture of him standing on the hill looking down, which I thought was very, very interesting.
Yeah, it made the New York Times even.
I mean, that was
and San Francisco Chronicle.
And then it was shortly after that Earth Day, that they declared Earth Day, which was on April 22nd.
2 months later was Earth Day.
So it's amazing. And so a lot of stuff was going on before that. So how do you feel looking at the environment and looking at what's going on now? What are some of your thoughts today after here was how many years ago, 54 years ago that you buried that car? How does it feel thinking that we're still struggling with the environment and with getting people to be aware about the issues that are happening?
Well, I'm sad that more action hasn't been taken. As you mentioned, the dollar has a bigger pull for people making decisions than the survival of our own species.
I know. You know, it's so amazing to me that it's been 50 years or 54 years and we're still struggling with it, and there's all kinds of stuff going on. I mean, right now in Dubai, I mean, they're flooding. I mean, I've been watching on the news. People are in a shock. It's like the first time anything this horrendous has happened in that country. You know, I believe Dubai is kind of a desert. So all of a sudden, you know, you have this flooding going on, and you have to question, is that part of the environment? Is that part of the environmental issues that we're struggling with now? And I say yes. And when you think about it, 50 years, that's a long time. I mean, it took us less time to get an airplane on the air, up in the air, than we're working on the environment. I mean, it's shocking. Well, Ken, any last words that you'd like to say to our listening audience? I really appreciate you coming on every year, telling your story, because the reason I think the story is important, because of the time, the timing. And students are becoming more and more aware today. I mean, I just heard that at Yale, they were protesting the Israel-Palestine conflict, and several students got arrested. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, oh, my God, deja vu. It's like we're way back then.
Yeah, I heard about it happening in Columbia University.
Well, my hat goes off to all the students, because it's the student movement that really prompted the anti-war movement. It's a student movement that really supported the environmental movement and got it on its way. So bravo to all our students. And I know at times, you know, getting arrested, all those things. I mean, I have so many friends that have been arrested back in the 60s and the 70s and all their stories. And this is what happens. And I don't understand it. I think that we lose touch, that we're all part of the human family, and that our earth is the mother and we must take care of her. Would you agree with that, Ken?
I agree, Elaine.
Any last words for our listeners?
No, I just be vigilant and protest in the way you can. Just encourage your political representatives to make policies that support the environment and support our Earth.
Well, you know, it's really important that we speak out, particularly women. Now, why do I say women? I mean, I don't believe in God. I believe in a creator. And I believe that whoever created or whatever created this beautiful planet, this beautiful earth, endowed women with the power to bring forward life. And we must stand up for that life. And that life needs good food, good air, and a safe planet, and a planet that is free from war. And I know in our next conversation is going to be a little bit, I'm taking a big risk talking about some of the things that we're talking about, but I think it's very, very important. And talking about, you know, because today's Earth Day, there's going to be on April 25th, which is Thursday, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Bertinoli Student Center at the Santa Rosa JC at 1501 Santa Rosa Avenue in Santa Rosa. There's going to be a climate action night. So I really encourage people to attend that. I mean, if we don't speak out and we don't pay attention to what's going on in the world, before you know it, everything's gone. You know, it's enough that women are losing their rights right and left right now. I mean, I can't believe what's going on around that. If we don't pay attention to stuff, it's going to slip out of our lives, and then we'll see what it's like to live in a country that has no rights and that just exploits all the way, all over the place. And, you know, I just think about it. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. But anyway, Climate Action Night, April 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Bertinelli Student Center at Santa Rosa JC. I really encourage folks to show up. Okay, well, we're going to have a musical break right now, and then I'm going to bring on Starhawk, who is an author, an activist, and an ecofeminist, and I'm really looking forward to it. And the song that we are going to play is Light a Candle, sung by Frozen Heart. And like I said, when we come back, we will be talking with Starhawk.
Instead of cursing in the darkness, light a candle for where we're going. There's something ahead worth looking for. When the light of time is on us, we will see a moment come, and the living soul inside will carry on. It's a chance to give new meaning to every move we make in the caverns and the caves where we come from.
going, 'cause there's something ahead worth looking for. When the light of time is on us, we will see a moment come, and the living soul inside will carry on.
Yes, what are we looking for ahead? We're looking for peace, justice, and a clean environment. For you just joining us, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And I am so honored to be doing this interview. Without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining on me on the phone is Starhawk. Welcome, Starhawk. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Hi, Elaine. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, come on. I'm just, like I said, I get so excited just thinking that I'm talking to you. Anyway, do you mind if I tell the folks just a little bit about you?
Not at all.
Starhawk is an author, an activist, a permaculture designer and teacher, and a prominent voice in modern earth-based spirituality and ecofeminism. Starhawk, before I go on, describe what ecofeminism is.
Ecofeminism is a term really for the understanding that the struggles around equalizing power for women and people of, non-male genders of all sorts, and equalizing power for us and the earth are related, that the way we treat the earth is often the way that men in patriarchal cultures have treated women. We talk about the rape of the earth or the exploitation of the earth. And that we need to understand that all of these liberation struggles, whether it's around gender, race, or ecology or environment, that they're all interrelated. They're all part of a system of power over that says a certain group of people are granted dominion over other people and over the earth and have the right to exploit and extract profit for their own gain without concern for others, and that whole system needs to be contested. You can contest one part or another part of it, but it's all interlocking.
Wow, it's amazing. I just think that word is so powerful. Well, let's continue. You are the author and also co-author of 13 books, and your most recent nonfiction book is called The Empowerment Manual, A Guide for Collaborative Groups on Group Dynamics, Power, Conflict, and Communications. Starhawk is also the founder of Earth Activist Training, teaching permaculture design grounded in spirituality with a focus on activism. She travels internationally lecturing and teaching on earth-based spirituality, the tools of ritual, and the skills of activism. She holds a BA in Fine Arts from UCLA in 1973. As a graduate student in film at UCLA, Starhawk won the prestigious Samuel Golden Creative Writing Award. She received an MA in psychology with a concentration in feminist therapy from Antioch University in 1982. So impressive. Is there anything you'd like to add, Starhawk?
Well, I think people probably know best either my book, The Spiral Dance, which was the first one about the ancient goddess religion, or The Fifth Sacred Thing, which is a novel that I wrote in the 90s that seems perhaps even a bit more prescient now, and its sequel, City of Refuge.
Well, you know, we're going to...
But a lot of what I do these days is teaching and practicing permaculture. I'm director of Earth Activist Training, which trains people in ecological and regenerative design with a grounding in spirit and a focus on organizing and activism.
Well, it's really a combination, and you can't do one without the other. I mean, especially the way the world's going today. You know, today's Earth Day. You know, and
yes.
And what's so interesting about Earth Day to me is that it's 54. We're celebrating the 54th year, and today at the before I brought you on the show, Kent told his story when he was at San Jose State in 1970, and they buried a car. You know, when they were where, and then all of a sudden Earth Day evolved out of that, and then they talk about Rachel Carson, and that's 62 years. So my question to you, because you've been so involved in the environmental field and so involved with the feminist issues, can you answer one simple, I don't know if it's a simple question, but why is it taking so darn long? Why don't we have a beautiful, I mean, 50, it took us less than 50 years to get a plane up in the air.
Well, I guess the simple answer to the not so simple question is that change takes time, and especially change that really confronts some of our core assumptions, our ingrained ways of life, takes a lot of time. But I think, you know, in political movements, we tend to be perfectionists. We sort of, if we don't achieve it all, we feel like we've achieved nothing. And I think we have to look and say, okay, we have made really some very, very important major environmental gains over that 50, 60 years. And obviously, we still have some crucial crises. But I was just reading an article in the paper this morning about how one of the problems now in California is we're producing more solar power than the system can use. Peak hours of production, which is a good problem to have.
Right.
And that's been a change that's happened very quickly. You know, we, climate change is a major, major crisis that has to be addressed. And to do it, we have to also confront our innate human resistance to change and to facing hard stuff. It's much, much easier to deny or, you know, blame or prevaricate or focus on something else than it is to really grapple with the problem. But we still have great capacity to deal with climate change and to restore some balance to the world and preserve some of the immense biodiversity and resilience of the Earth. And we know how to do it, and we have technology, even at the present, that we can do it with. So it's not an insurmountable problem at all. We just need the political will to get on with it.
Well, you know, it's a very important day, and I'm glad we celebrate. At least it brings attention. It brings in, and one of the things that I've been calling, particularly around women, is that, you know, we are the ones that the Creator endowed in our bodies the ability to bring forward life, and we all have to stand up for that life. It's more than just a little puzzle to play with a kid. It's a commitment. Once you have a child, to commit to even act to being an activist and standing up for all these things. So I really want to thank you for sharing all that about the environment, because it is a very important day. But what inspired me to bring you on this time, and I'm just going to make a little note to my listeners about this, is that you wrote a very, very beautiful, I mean, I've read it about three times now, because I myself, as you know, I'm a Jewish woman, you're a Jewish woman. You know, and for me, it feels like I'm coming out of the closet. You know, I kind of kept it a secret for all these years, you know, because I didn't like the issues that I had to deal with being Jewish, especially around the anti-Semitism. But with all this that's happening right now with the Israel Palestine conflict, I think it's very important, particularly that women like ourselves, that we come out of the closets, or like that I come out, and that I encourage people like you to be on the air to talk about this. So this is a big step for me, and I just wanted you to know that. And I want my folks to know just about this. The article that I read that she wrote is called "We Need to Talk to My Jewish Community." And when I first saw the title, I thought, wow, that's really interesting. We need to talk to my Jewish community. What motivated you to write that?
Well, of course, it was motivated by this terrible, terrible situation in Gaza. And, you know, I'm far more known as a pagan and a goddess person than as a Jew. But because I've written so much about feminist spirituality and earth-based spirituality, I get asked to talk at a variety of places. And I, you know, from time to time get asked to speak or help lead a part of a service at a Jewish synagogue. Usually, always, like, a pretty, like, I'd say left-leaning, progressive, you know, often a Reconstructionist or Jewish Renewal Movement group. And more than once, I've been sort of taken aside and said, well, we really want you to speak, but please don't speak about Palestine because it's so divisive and we want to maintain good feelings. And I'm always, when that has been said, have kind of responded and just say, well, thank you for the invitation, but I'm not going to take it at this time. Like, I don't, I can't agree to that. And I think that that has been operative in the Jewish community too much. Like, we don't even talk to each other because it is so painful and so polarizing. But I feel like this is a moment where we have to break through that and we have to have these conversations, even if they are difficult. And I believe you can have difficult and challenging conversations while still holding compassion for someone with a different view, being willing to listen as well as share your point of view. But the situation right now is too grave to ignore, and it colors every aspect of life, and it's certainly coloring my feelings tonight as I prepare to go to a Seder with some friends. You know, we have become unwillingly or willingly complicit in horrific crimes that are taking place now against the people in Gaza. And yes, their response to horrific crimes that took place when Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, and those deserve to be condemned. There's no justifying that level of cruelty and horror.
I think,
and there are still, hostages being held.
I think,
but.
I'm going to interrupt you. I think the most important thing you said is that there's no justification. You know, that's what the thing that really gets me when I hear I hear reasons. There's no rhyme or reason in my mind for war or any kind of conflict for that. But the next question I need to ask you is, you know, if for me personally, on a personal level, this has been a very difficult to speak out. You know, I brought this art show in 2011, and that's when I really start becoming aware of how the children were suffering. And I wrote an article, and in writing the article about it, I had a vision of my grandmother, you know, all of a sudden putting this Star of David on me, and then all of a sudden, you know, seeing in the children's pictures, you see these Star of Davids on the bomb, and all of a sudden, I got frozen. And so the question I have, where do you get your confidence? I mean, here you are, you're coming into these different areas, you're saying, no, I'm not going to speak if I can't talk about this, and now that you're coming out with some of these articles that you're coming out, where is that confidence coming, and how would you like to, how would you encourage other, especially Jewish women, to stand up and just get into the conversation?
Well, I honestly think some of that confidence comes from my Jewish heritage. You know, right? The whole point about Judaism was never that you were supposed to have a kind of blind faith in dogma. You know, the very word Israel literally means like a wrestler with God. And the story about how Jacob got his name was by arguing with God, wrestling with God. You know, that is the whole point about Judaism, that you do stand up even to God, you know, and argue your case. It also comes out of my feminism and many, many decades that I've been involved in struggles, both for the liberation and equality of women, but also for looking at some of the underpinnings of the ideas and the consciousness that results in oppression. And, you know, it's important for us as women to have a voice and to use it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. All of a sudden, you know, Eli Witzel, I'm sure you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book they put in the concentration camps, which I thought was very interesting. They put God on trial. You know, mm-hmm. why was this happening? I mean, because the big focus, of course, with the conflict is because of the Holocaust and the Never Again and all these different things, all these different issues. But in this particular book, you know, they go through this whole thing about God's on trial and they bring on witness. And this is in the middle of these horrendous things that are happening to them. And they come out, they find God not guilty. And that's because we were given freedom of choice. And so when I read that book and I realized freedom of choice, that in other words, we're choosing these things. And another thing that was interesting about the book is how they talk about how you can change your mind. When you have choice, you can have, you can change your mind. You can move in another mm-hmm. direction. And I wonder why that is not understood. I mean, because when they talk about Israel and they talk about, oh, this is their land. I mean, I can't imagine anybody saying, okay, you can have this land, you can kill everybody else around you in order to be there. And it's the same thing with it, what was happening in Germany. I mean, like, we give ourselves permission to kill each other. So, you know, how do you overcome that idea? It's just a crazy thought to me.
Well, I wish I knew how to overcome that idea. I think somebody once said that it's very hard to convince somebody about something that their livelihood depends on believing in. And I think it's also very hard to convince somebody to give up an idea that they have invested a lot of their identity and security in believing. And that's part of what I wrote in that article, is just really acknowledging the difficult emotional struggle it is to come to terms with that. And it's one that I had to go through myself when I got involved in activism with the International Solidarity Movement 20 years ago now, supporting nonviolent resistance against the occupation. And it really came from a call from people like myself, a woman named Netta Golan, who was an Israeli who began doing nonviolent resistance in Palestine, chaining herself to olive trees, supporting villagers that were under attack, ended up marrying a Palestinian, and she and I became very good friends. Another friend of mine who was in Jenin when a bulldozer destroyed it and was there for the cleanup and wrote a very moving piece about just going through the ruins and discovering the braids of a little girl and comforting a father whose child had been lost in this, you know. And at a certain point, the discomfort of actually knowing pieces of what was going on outweighed the resistance to challenging, you know, the myths and the stories I grew up with of how important Israel was to us as Jews and how Israel was the great compensation for the horrors of the Holocaust. And you know, I know it's not an easy emotional journey to make. And it can be very hard in this context when the people who are supporting justice for Palestine are, you know, angry, rightfully angry. That anger comes out often as condemnation of Zionists, and that's totally understandable. But if you always grew up where Zionists was a good thing, where your family and the people who you loved and who cared for you were all proudly identified as Zionists, it's a hard leap to make. You know? And so, again, it's, you know, it's an important holiday right now for anyone of Jewish heritage. It's a dreadful moment right now to see, I mean, to me, that image of the Star of David on the tank or on the bomb.
Oh, God, I mean, that
it makes just... you question, like, is it really a good thing to have a country based in a religion? Would it not be better to have a country that was based in, say, a commitment to being a safe haven for anyone of religion?
I thought that's what the United States was about, the fact that we did not limit, that all religions were welcome.
And that is what we're, I mean, that's one of the best things we're supposed to be about. And right now we seem to be in a crisis again to defend that idea against those who want to say, no, this is a Christian nation and we should all be Christian nationalists.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting what we go through. You know, it really is. And for, you know, for myself on a personal level, this has been very difficult for me, you know, because like you said, you know, there's something that I want to read something that wrote, and I'd like you to compliment on this. And I think this is kind of, this to me kind of painted a picture of my own family. Mostly your own people inside and outside the house just don't want to talk about it because to acknowledge it is so deeply shameful and painful. A bit, not nearly as painful it is to be one of the prisoners trapped in that locked door. So can you elaborate on that just a little bit, what you're thinking here?
Yeah, I was reflecting on a practice in the West Bank where soldiers would come in, they would commandeer, you know, a house as a base of operations, and they'd often lock the family into one room. And go about their business in the other room as if this family just wasn't there, it didn't exist. And to me, that seemed a kind of an analogy of what we'd done with the whole Palestinian situation collectively, is to create a kind of locked room and just sort of say, well, these people don't exist. Because I was reflecting on just in all the years I've, you know, went to Sunday school and Hebrew school and had a year of Hebrew high school and the year of the University of Judaism that I went to along with being at UCLA, and how little the Palestinian crisis was even addressed. If it was, it was just kind of dismissed. And so it's kind of like, you know, that locked room. It's like probably all of us have a closet in the house that we just don't want to open because when we do, everything's going to spill out. Well, imagine if you opened it and there was a family in there that you had kept locked in for years and years and years. The horror of that and the shame of admitting that we are people who can do that. We can do horrible things just like any other people on the planet. We are not somehow special and set apart. That's, people don't want to face that, and they don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to open that door. But like I said, I feel like at this point we have to open that door, because literally, you know, children are starving to death behind it. And to me, there is no justification for that.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you what you just said, because while we I was writing the article that I sent you that I know you read, that while I was writing it, Ken, who my partner, he was doing genealogy, and he finds a picture of my grandmother with her naturalization papers. And, and all of a sudden, all the stories about what it was like to escape Europe, what it was like to come over here and to kiss the ground when they saw this statue, you know, when they saw the Statue of Liberty, and on all those stories. So, you know, it's very close to our heart. And I think, and what the, another thing that you said is very important is about what woke me up more than anything was that art show. That film, when I saw those, not only the Jewish stars, but when I recognized that how the children were suffering, and even today, when you go on Facebook, every once or rather YouTube, every once in a while, you'll come into a little conflict, and there's the children. In fact, there was one film they had where the children were playing in the rubbles, and I thought, oh my God, when are we going to ever learn to live in peace? Well, you know, I want to take a short musical break, very short. Well, actually, I don't think we're going to take a musical break. We got we got a few minutes, and the one thing that I wanted to get to you is you authored an important book. You know, I remember when it came out. I remember when you start doing classes on it. It's called Empowerment Manual, a guide for collaborative groups on group dynamics, power, conflict, and communication. How do you see this writing or this what you put together? How do you see that going out into the community and making maybe actually helping people to understand what's going on and to how they can work for peace in this area, peace and justice?
Well, I wrote the empowerment manual because, you know, being an activist my whole life, I've also been involved in groups my whole life, and I saw so many of them struggling around the same issues. So I wanted to try to shed some light on that and offer some help for groups, especially groups that are organized in a non-hierarchical collaborative way, because there's thousands of books about how to run a corporation and how to organize management top-down, but not as much about how to run something that is horizontal and has different issues. So that's where the Empowerment Manual came from, and I think a lot of groups have used it. It's designed so you can take it and use it and apply it yourself. I also teach courses through Earth Activist Training. We're in the middle of one now on facilitation that we're teaching online. And in the fall, we're going to do an online course on empowering collaborative groups and use the book as a text. We're also talking about doing an in-person weekend at Golden Rocks Permaculture Farm in Lake County. So it'll be right in the area. And I think it's important when we are organizing and working together to invest some time and energy in learning how to do the organizing well and how to get along together, how to communicate well, how to resolve conflicts, because that is really one of the constraining factors on our ability to change the world. We have to be able to work together and do it.
Well, what are some of the hints you give people in there? What are some of the ideas you have?
Well, some of them are very simple, like, it seemed like for me, I was always in a group where people would say, communication in this group is all messed up. And I finally realized, you know, if you're in a hierarchy, there are clear lines of communication. You know who you report to and who you don't. If you're in a collective and the group makes a decision and somebody doesn't happen to be there, there's no clear way that somebody says, oh, wait a minute, Elaine wasn't at this meeting and she needs to know. Who's going to tell her? So even just stopping at the end of the meeting and say, okay, who else needs to know the results of this and who's going to tell them can avoid huge amounts of conflict when that missing person suddenly discovers that they got they missed out on some key information that they needed to know, and then maybe takes it personally and feels like people were excluding them or didn't care about them. There's a lot of little tools like that in the book.
Yeah, it goes on and on with conflict. It's very, very interesting. I have one rule, and that's the no gossip rule. You know, so you don't start telling a tale about somebody, and before you know it, it gets around, and before you know one, everybody's taking sides. And I said, no. I always say, if you're going to talk about someone else, I don't want to hear it, because I know you're going to talk about me at some point. Well, anyway, it's very, very interesting. Working in groups is very important. But at the same time, when you look at war is a conflict. And it's almost like we've forgotten how to sit down and talk to each other. Even when you look at the media, you look at films, you look at they have all these series now on Netflix and all the other things. And a lot of it is around violence. And it doesn't show you how to sit down and talk. It just shows you how to beat somebody up or how to oppress somebody rather than get somebody on your team and working together. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about. Well, you know, we've come to the end almost the end of the segment. And anything else that we've got about 4 minutes here, anything else, anything that you feel is very important that you would like our listeners to know about, and also to let them know how they can get a hold of you, and just anything that's on your mind, just feel you have this opportunity to just go ahead and just take time and let us know what you're thinking and what you'd like us to know.
Well, it is Earth Day, and just if people are looking for what we can actually do for the Earth, I do teach permaculture quite a lot. We have a lot of classes coming up, including 3 in-person classes in May. The last 2 weekends in May and the first weekend in June, one is on herbal medicine for homesteading and for people and animals that my friend Delilah Wilson is teaching. Then over Memorial Day weekend, we're going to do a wonderful workshop up at our place on a combination called Mud Magic that's going to be on natural building and sculpture and art and creativity. And then we're going to do a water workshop the following weekend, Sacred Flow, on stream restoration and water management. So people are welcome to come to those or to check out. We do a lot of online courses at earthactivisttraining.org, and that's a good way to get hold of me and see what I'm doing. Or you can look at my website, starhawk.org. I'll be teaching 2 full permaculture design courses this summer, one in British Columbia on Vancouver Island with a special focus on decolonizing permaculture, and that'll be the first 2 weeks in July at OUR Eco Village, and then one in France in August. That's going to be a family-friendly course in a beautiful eco village in the south of France. So,
oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
That sounds...
And there's lots of material that we have online. We just did a fundraiser for Earth Activist Training, and I think the recording is still up there online on Soil Sages, that has some of the things that you can actually do. I demonstrate how to sheet mulch, and we have a wonderful presentation from one of our students in Uganda who's doing some amazing work there. And just to say to people that with all the horrible things going on right now, there still are tremendous potentials for hope and for people getting together and doing the work of earth healing and regeneration. I did post another article this morning on Substack that was something I wrote 20 years ago when I was in a peace camp in the West Bank over Passover. And I think it at least offers a glimmer of hope about that situation, that when people come together to work for justice, when people come together across the lines of their difference to take care of their communities. You know, out where I live in the West County, we get together just about every weekend to do fire abatement and thinning and limbing and taking care of the land to make it more resilient in case of wildfire. There's a huge movement for that happening all over the West, and it's hopeful. And there are so many things we can do. And just to encourage people, rather than getting bogged down in the hopelessness of how big and awful everything seems, focus on the things we can do and do them. And that does actually make a big difference.
Well, you're awfully, you're very, very inspiring. And I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to send out a special invitation to you, and it's also my way of making an announcement. On August the 10th here in Sonoma County, the National Organization for Women is going to be hosting. We have a Sonoma County chapter. We are going to be hosting the California Now chapters, and we're going to have our conference mm-hmm. here. And I would really hope to see you, that I will send you the information, because your presence and even making a statement and just knowing that you're there would be such an honor, just as with all the work that you've done. Well, Starhawk, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces, and always know that if you ever need an announcement or anything, that we're always here for you. And thank you so thank much you. For what you do, and for you're such an inspiration.
Thanks. And thank you for doing this wonderful work that you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Anyway, that's it for our show, folks. I mean, we've just been interviewed and talking with Starhawk, who is an author and an activist and an eco-feminist. I just loved it. And remember, everything is going to be, all the shows will be on www.womenspaces.com. This is Elaine B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
The woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 22nd, 2024.